This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of November 23rd. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday evening after Game 2 of the Japan Series is Jim Allen. How you doing, man?
I'm still awake. And that's not easy, considering tonight's game.
Well, wait a minute. You did a live viewing. I was the one who was dozing.
I did do a live viewing, but the remaining viewers and I decided, oh, we've got the pain to watch try.
Well, you were the half dead viewing then. Well, not a live viewing, huh?
Yeah, it was sort of a static viewing, indeed.
Sort of like
we were waiting for the cave painting to come out. Yeah,
yeah, sort of like where the Giants are now, down two games after two games. So yeah, not very much of a live viewing, but
post. But there was some, but we'll have some post mortem. So don't worry.
All right. Well, I was thinking, you know, can we sick the SoftBank Hawks on the coronavirus?
I also thought,
because if we could, we wouldn't. I mean, the virus wouldn't have a chance, you know.
The virus is in another league, man.
Yeah, league of its own. Anyway, we want to thank the frontline workers and the healthcare workers worldwide for their efforts. And geez, maybe SoftBank can contribute somehow. The company can contribute somehow to fighting this thing, because they're really good at whatever they put their minds to do. So. We'd appreciate it, SoftBank, because you're killing the baseball world and the telephone world. Anyway, on this week's show, we've got a chat with Hawks first-year lefty Matt Moore. We're going to discuss the Japan series, which is pretty much half over, or, what's left of the Giants to try to come out and win a game, maybe. We're going to talk about DeNA's new manager and some high-profile free agents before hitting some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so on Wednesday afternoon, we had the pleasure of sitting down once again with Matt Moore of the Hawks. Like I said, he's a first-year lefty. He went 6-3 in the regular season, and he was a featured guest on the show September 14th. That was show number 31. Wow, show number 31? Which one is this one? This is show 41. Wow, we've been busy. Matt has done well, all things considered, getting over an injury early on in the season and coming on in this COVID-impacted, COVID-slowed, and COVID-plagued season. But, I didn't mention this before when Zach Neal was on the show, but Zach and his wife are expecting a child, and so are the Matt Moore, so are the Moores. Mm-hmm. He and his wife are expecting their second child. And get this, this is the difference between the Neal family and the Moore family. The Neals they already know the gender and have named their child, whereas Matt and his wife don't want to know the gender, and they're going to wait and see when the baby is born, just like in the 60s, like when you and I were born. Isn't that cool?
It's nostalgic.
It is. I mean, in this, gender reveal kind of world that we're in, I just found that to be very charming.
You know, I'm so out of it. When I first started seeing gender reveal things on the internet, I thought it was people coming out as LB, as transgender and others. I thought that's what the gender reveal was. I'm serious. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was about a baby thing.
I'm glad you're out from under your rock. And welcome.
Hashtag hi.
Welcome to the world. And it's all about the babies.
Okay.
LGBTQ people are very thrilled that you're with the rest of us. But getting back to real world. Matt is likely to be the starter.
I think I've been insulted.
No, don't think that at all.
Okay.
All right. Oh. Matt is likely to be the starter for game 3 on Tuesday. So that'll be the day after we post the show. He has playoff experiences with, among other teams, the Rays and the Giants. And I think the last playoff game he started was an NLDS game with the Giants in 2016. So anyway, I think he's really now in the position to put the clamps down on the Giants in the series. And so let's take a listen to Matt Moore.
All right, we're pleased to be joined by Matt Moore of the SoftBank Hawks. He's on his way home. He's driving home, so we are glad to take the ride with you. Thank you very much for joining us on JBW.
Sure, no problem.
All right, so let's get right into it. How would you assess your first regular season in MPV, albeit a truncated and coronavirus-impacted season?
You know, I think I've learned a lot this season. Overall, I think just the different types of hitter that seem to be throughout the lineup, and you know, the amount of speed that each team seems to have. It seems like everybody runs, you know, a little bit above average. So just make the speed of the game, you know, certain things to expect with you know, playing small ball and those types of things. I think at this point I feel adjusted to, you know, expecting certain things, that maybe, you know, this time last year I wasn't. But I've gotten to know my teammates better, gotten to kind of understand a little bit of the way things are done here. And, it feels, you know, a lot better than it did, you know, 7-8 months ago, where it kind of felt like I had a lot of catching up to do.
Right. Now, do you try to evaluate your performance, or how do you go about just looking back at the whole season?
Well, typically I wait till the end, you know, when I'm at home, or, you know, in the off season, the first, you know, week or two, to kind of decompress. But overall, the way I kind of look at things, it's not so much data driven. It's availability driven. You know, did I do my best to give myself a chance to be ready on my day to pitch? You know, was I available every time it was my turn to take the hill?
Right.
What my performance level is as far as, how my body felt throughout the year. Those are things that, you know, I can control, you know. And then, you know, from a baseball standpoint, I think that's kind of in between starts. I try to make those recognitions, and, you know, whether it be falling behind too often, or, you know, command of a certain pitch, or, you know, maybe pitch sequencing, those types of things kind of seem to take place week to week. But from an overall, go through the season, you know, I usually kind of chew a lot of that, you know, when it's all said and done. But minus the calf injury, you know, I felt pretty good every time it's been my turn to pitch. You know, there's more days off here, which is nice. I just try to take advantage of those.
Right. Now, you were scheduled to pitch against the Lotte Marines in the Climax Series, but a sweep kind of wiped that outing away. So, you know, you've had this stop-start season with the coronavirus. How do you prepare mentally for a Japan Series appearance against the Giants coming up?
Yeah, it's different. A lot of kind of waiting around doing nothing between these series. And even from the last game, you know, from the makeup game, there was a five-day wait. And then now that this series, the Climax Series, over, it's another five-day wait. And, you know, that's another thing to get used to, is just figuring out a way to get ready on those days when you need to be. But, you know, in the end, I think, today I threw, had two innings against my own team, you know, just trying to get, I think in the last 22, 23 days, you know, I've thrown three innings. So it's not exactly ideal, but, I just got to kind of deal with the things that I can control, and kind of try not to think too much about the things that are out of my control. And you know, when I pitch is out of my control. So I felt great today, and you know, I think this time of year, only having about 80 innings with Ichigun under my belt, you know, maybe close to 100 total, I feel good. I feel strong. You know, I feel probably better now than I did, you know, 2 or 3 months ago.
That makes sense. All right, so now you're going to go up against Japan's marquee team in the Japan Series. What is that like as a, you know, I'm sure that if there's one team in Japan that you knew of before you came to Japan, it was the Giants. So what's the feeling going up against that team in the Japan Series?
Uh, I think it's kind of neat, you know. Obviously, I feel lucky to have my first year here, you know, be able to play in the series. It's a big deal, and to be able to be on a team that won the Pacific League is, I feel very fortunate just kind of having fell into the situation I'm in. But I pitched against the Giants in spring training, you know, and I imagine, you know, they're going to be tough. Obviously, coming from the Central League and winning that pretty easily, not easily, but decisively. You know, I think it should be a good series for us. I'm looking forward to it.
Now, when did you actually, I mean, you guys had to obviously play the Climax series first, but when did you actually start thinking about them? Because you knew they had won the Central League and that they were going directly to the Japan series.
I guess when we won the Central League, right? You know, our immediate focus was on Chiba and on the Marines. And, you know, we had played them, shoot, probably 20 of our last 35 games. It felt like we played Chiba. So, you know, it wasn't something we really had to open up the book too much for. It was fresh in our mind. So, you know, our starting pitching came out and did a pretty good job. And, you know, the offense didn't need to score, you know, didn't need to have too big of games to take away those two first games. But, yeah, I think we're in a good spot heading into the final series.
All right. So how do you actually prep for the Giants? Now, you said you faced them in spring training, but that's not real baseball, and they're probably a lot different then. So how do you get ready for them?
You know, to be honest with you, not anything special. I think in general it has more to do with the things that I do more than the things they do. You know, if I go out and execute my pitches, if I do the work to get myself ready to pitch my game, you know, I think a lot of times you see in the playoffs, you know, I've just in that situation, you feel like your body is going to give you more. And I think, you know, in general, my tendency is almost to back off the gas a little bit. You know, it is the biggest series of the year, but it is the same game we've been playing all season. So to try not to get mentally too amped up for it, I think winds up being a big favor you can do yourself. And that's kind of the way I'm trying to take it is, you know, one pitch at a time. You know, it is the Giants, but we've played every team in this league since I've been here so far, except for maybe, you know, the Dragons or the Bay Stars. But, you know, in general, I think, you know, you kind of start to get ahead of yourself when you start to make it out to be more than it is.
Sure, sure. All right, now, I did check your career splits, and then I looked at your splits here in MPV. And in MPV, you faced almost the same amount of lefties as you did righties, but your career splits kind of show a tendency to give up a higher average allowed to lefties than righties. So how much does that aspect play into your pitching plan as you get ready for the Japan series start?
You know, I think in general, it comes down to execution. A lot of left-handers here, you know, like to get out of the box real quick. So, you know, from a slugging percentage, you know, the batting average isn't really much more than some, you know, some singles. But in general, it comes down to execution, you know. And I think at times with the left-handers, at times, you know, I kind of pitch for the wipeout strikeout pitch at times that kind of get me in trouble and can level the count in the hitter's favor. But, yeah, it, in general, it just comes down to execution. You know, I think this year lefties are hitting, you know, somewhere around 250 off me or so, which is higher than I'd like, but definitely not something that I need to be too concerned about and make massive adjustments at this time of the year.
Yeah, okay. Now, we talked to Coco Ballantyne a couple of weeks ago, and he said that winning is just so much part of the culture at SoftBank. So how have you seen that aspect of the organizational DNA of the Hogs?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I think even in spring training or, you know, games where you're just like, you know, why is our eighth inning guy pitching right here? It's just a spring training game. They like to win them all, you know, and I think that's it's a part of the attitude that, you know, the coaching staff carries, and it's something that has served them well. But, yeah, I mean, I think any team, you know, whether it be in the big leagues or in the MPB, you're trying to win every single game, and you try to do just about everything you can that day without handcuffing yourself in the short term to give yourself the best possible chance. And I've seen, there's quite a bit of, compared to the other teams, a good amount of money on this team, and it doesn't really seem to make a factor in their decision making. It's kind of playing the hot hand, and what have you done for me lately, for sure. And that's typically the way that winning attitude will take you, is you're gonna play towards the upside and who's playing well.
Earlier I said that the spring training games are not real baseball. The reason I say that is because I know a lot of guys go into that situation with different agendas. For instance, pitchers are going to work on a certain pitch on that day. Players want to work on certain things in their hitting approach. You got young guys who are trying to make the club versus maybe veteran guys who are just working on things. So there's a lot of different agendas instead of winning. So when you see the eighth inning guy go out there and pitch, you said you questioned it, but what is that message that goes to you, other than this team really wants to win, but is there another message behind it when you see that guy go out and pitch in a spring training game?
No, and that wasn't a particular incident. I was just kind of making up an example that kind of, it's the eighth inning, and we still have the horses in there, type of thing. Like, you still have, your center fielder, you still have your starting catcher, and
sure.
I think just in general, the idea of baseball here. I mean, we were watching the Phoenix League yesterday, and I see Yasuda and Tamura from the Marines. I mean, they just got done playing us 2 days ago, and they're already down there getting at bats. And I couldn't believe it. It's just, I think, a different mindset in general of the sport. I think rest and that sort of thing doesn't seem to be, on their mind as much. I think they definitely take a quantity, over quality type of approach to things. And you can tell, typically, the Japanese player is fundamentally sound. It's a lot of instinct. It's not too much thinking. The game's played fast. They run well. From a winning standpoint, I can't say I've been on a team that isn't trying to win, with the players they have. I've been on teams that maybe aren't spending as much money as they could, but, from a winning standpoint, I don't know a manager that would put together a lineup, without handcuffing himself in the short term that's not trying to win, Futo-san is no different. He's doing his best to make the toughest lineup for that pitcher that night, and, making decisions of who's going to get the ball. And you can kind of, at this point, you can kind of tell who's going to pitch in what situation out of the bullpen, and that's not unlike other teams I've been on.
All right, so last question. All this club seems to do is win Japan Series titles, and we know our buddy Dennis Sarfate is back home, unavailable, probably in retirement. I saw him somewhere, I can't remember, with a long bushy beard, and looks like he's gonna ride off into the sunset here. But how much do you feel, as a new guy coming in, to try, I don't know if it's pressure or what is it that you feel as a new guy coming in and trying to keep the success of this team winning Japan Series titles going?
Personally, I don't feel any added pressure. I think the way this team is built, whether it just be timing, it seems like every organization has their ups and downs, and the window for winning doesn't always stay open for quite as long as it has here. But in general, I think it's a tough combination here. They pitch and play catch really well, and they also have a bruiser of a lineup. Something that, if one day the pitching's off, you still have a chance because your offense is most likely going to show up, and it's vice versa. If the offense is only going to scratch, one or two runs across, you still have a chance because your pitchers, are going to give you a good chance. I'm not sure, but early in the year, I think they were telling us, we're in the top of the league in ERA, and we're in the top of the league in runs scored. So that's, it's a good combination for winning. You know, it's very rare from what I've seen. You know, typically you don't see the number one offense or number two offense and the number one pitching or number two pitching. It's not always quite so symmetrical, but you know, for this organization, they've done a really good job of building depth, you know, and it seems like each year they have, you know, one or two guys kind of step up and really make a difference. And, you know, obviously for us this year, it's, you know, Kurihara, you know, Ishikawa, you know, the types of season, even now, you know, I think Higashihama was hurt last year. You know, and those types of players to be able to come and really, step up, you know, and, I think is kind of where they make their bread and butter. And, you know, it's been fun to be a part of a team that wins as much as this. I think we're 31 games over 500. I've never been a part of anything close to that. You know, been on some 10, 15 games over, you know, but it feels good. You know, it definitely adds to the confidence every day that, you know, the other team has to deal with us, not, you know, not so much the other way around. But it's been good. You know, the guys are great. It's a lot of humble guys. You know, and you don't get that, I don't think, a whole lot on teams as good as this is.
Yeah, I don't at all mean to belittle this team, because I keep telling people, I said, whatever the other teams in Japan are doing, this team is doing something different. Now, I can't identify it. We don't get to see practices. We don't get to see a lot behind. I mean, we don't even get to go to the games now as the media. But right. Even when you're out there, you don't get to go into the locker rooms or anything. So, but this team always seems to be doing something different, and it's highly successful. It makes predicting what's going on very simple and easy. Just always go with the Hawks first and then work your way down from there, unfortunately.
Yeah. You know, and they have quality players that are, you know, on the Nigun team or, you know, the second team, you know, it's, I think a lot of it has to do with culture, and it starts from the top down. It starts with the older guys, and, you know, Machi and Keizo and Yanagita and
don't forget my man. That's one of my favorite players in Japan, Yanagita.
Yeah. I mean, he's a stud. You know, he's our best player, and you know, he gives me that feeling. You know, when he goes up there, like something good's about to happen. But I think it's in general, the older guys do a good job of setting the culture and letting the younger guys know that, hey, that's not okay. You know, I've seen, whether it be Hasegawa. Yeah, Hasegawa or one of the other guys that'll grab, you know, a Kawase or Makihara and kind of let them know right away if something happened. So I think it's always kind of been that way, whether it be in high school or, you know, somewhere, some other team. You know, the leadership typically is the older guys, and they're going to set the standard of what's accepted. And I think here, you know, it's nothing different. I think they have, you know, a presence with veterans, you know, that I've never seen. I mean, they have guys who've been here for 10, 15 years. It's incredible. And I think that, you know, that tradition is going to stick around of winning and you know, expecting to win. That's going to stick around a lot longer when you keep those players around.
Definitely so. All right. Well, we appreciate your time very much. Thank you very much. I hope you've been driving safely and you get home safely. We'll talk to you next time, and good luck in the Japan series.
Hey, thank you, John. I appreciate it.
All right. So Matt misspoke. He says the Hawks clinched the Central League when it was the Pacific League. But hey, look, we can chalk that up to his first year, you know, jitters or issues or anything else. But what stuck with you after you heard this interview?
Oh, a couple of things I thought were kind of interesting. Well, first, I love the Giants. Your description of the Giants as a marquee team, and that is quite appropriate. I mean, they are kind of the facade of Japanese baseball.
In this series, definitely. Yeah. <It's a> facade.
Well, that's like, yeah, one of those Western movies, the fake fronts, you know, that you see in the streets of old West towns. Right. No, I think what got to me was it was fairly standard, I thought, you know, very much the way I think I might have actually said this the first Matt Moore interview we had. Everything is very measured and sort of executed when he talks. There's not a lot of wasted energy, or, you know, he says things very clearly. He says things pretty much straight to the point. This happened, that happened, this person, and so on and so forth. So nothing really surprising. But I guess what I liked was the way he described, well, two things, quantity over quality.
Mm.
And I'll tell you, that's not a very surprising take. But I'll tell you what is surprising to me is that I've heard this, and it's not a surprising take because I've probably heard it from 24 players. And that was before I found a rock to hide under. And there's been an evolution in the way players have said it. I mean, it used to be they should know that in the major leagues, we believe this. But in Japan, they believe that. So they are wrong.
Mm.
Okay, it's gone from that to a kind of a halfway stage, you know, to where many people where we come from will think this, although the other people think that. But in Japan, they're really like this. So there's kind of a measured view. And now it's very much like America's like this and Japan's like that. There's far less moralistic kind of self-righteous judgmentalism nowadays.
Yeah, but you don't have a number on that, right? That's just
no, I'm just saying, right? That I've encountered it. It's very often now I hear players say that's the way they do it, and I learned something from that, as sure, opposed to how it used to be, which is they're all doing it wrong.
Yeah, that's stupid. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. So his attitude was very much like, okay, this is the way they do it. And you could hear his concern, you know, do they not quite understand grasp the concept of rest? And yeah, there is concern there, but there's also a little bit of wonder. And I remember hearing that when, you know, I've talked to players in the past, and case of Tuffy Rhodes comes up, and I said, well, you know, what was one of the things that helped you adjust to Japanese baseball? And he said, like swinging for like 7 hours. I'm exaggerating, but I think he took like an hour long batting practice or something after, in the evening after practice.
Right.
And he said it's like his whole body hurt for like 48 hours. And he said it taught me, you know, he learned things from that, even though he thought it was absolutely nuts. But in the end, he sort of thought he found value in it, which is interesting. But at the beginning, he's like going, oh, you got to be kidding me.
Right, right, right. Takes a while the adjustment is not just physical, right? It's a mental.
No, it's not. And he hit that right at the start. You know, I learned the way they do things. Of course, that's such a normal response to every question. We learn how they do things. But very often how they do things is in ways that really don't make sense to you. And this is something, that's hard for a lot of people, is adjusting to things and almost sustaining disbelief long enough to stick it out and find, you know, and learn something from something that looks like it has absolutely zero value for that. You want to just sort of disregard to save your energy.
Sure. Sure.
And I think some of the guys who do well here are often looking for lessons, not only embracing Japanese baseball or embracing the fact that they're here and things are going to be different, but sometimes looking for lessons in places where their inner voice is telling them there's nothing here and I'm wasting my time.
Right. Yeah, sometimes, I mean, the phrase is seek and you shall find, not take a look or peek and you shall find.
So,
You really have to seek. Yeah. For me, I guess I really liked when he wrapped up the season with the phrase, there has been a lot of waiting around and doing nothing. And obviously, he started off with the calf injury that slowed him down at the beginning of the season. Then you had the coronavirus stoppage and the delay to the start of the season. And then he picked it up. He says, you know, since the playoff or the postseason began, he has been waiting around and didn't get to pitch in that first series. And I did look it up. He threw three innings against Cebu on November 9th. So literally, like you were saying, three innings he had pitched since or over the past 22, 23 days. So three plus weeks. And so it'll probably be almost a month by the time he gets out there on Tuesday. So that, and of course he said, you know, I try not to think too much about things I can't control, but obviously he's thinking about that because he mentioned it. And so,
here we are, the pseudo psychologists of the week.
Oh, no. I mean, it's just the fact. I mean, you know, you try not to think about it. I didn't say that he wasn't thinking about it at all. I mean, he says he tries not to think about it, but obviously it's on his mind. It's part of the game and part of that adjustment that you have to do being in Japan and going through this process and having one, ridiculously, having one league have a playoff format and the other league not having a playoff format. And that's just part of it. But I guess what I liked best was the fact that he reinforced the statements that Coco Ballantyne made to us in his recent interview on the show. And mm-hmm. that was that it doesn't matter what your name is, your draft position, your contract figures. It really matters what you do when called upon to execute the plan and what you do on the field. And so that focus on winning and that focus on getting the person who gets the job done in there, get that person on the field is what boosts this team. And like I told him, I said, look, I watched, even when I go and watch in the past years and starting with the beginning of this run by the Hawks of winning every Japan series, it seems every year, but it's only going to be seven out of the past 10. Mm-hmm. Only seven out of the past 10. I just keep thinking, okay, well, this team is doing it differently. And it's not that they're swinging the bats differently or they're taking their batting practice differently or they're coaching differently. It's just that they just have a different kind of approach, a different kind of attitude from off the field to on the field. And part of that, and like I talked about a long time ago when we discussed the Giants, I think it was an interview with Scott Matheson, and I'm mm-hmm. telling him how the Giants look toward winning, want to win every time they step on the field, have a pride that doesn't allow them to, even when they get behind a game, say, well, we're not going to win this game. We'll just try to get them tomorrow. They don't think that way. And it's just the whole mindset and the whole organizational DNA that they, it's actually not right to say DNA because they create this DNA. You can't control it, but they make this. Mm. So I just look at the SoftBank Hawks and they're just doing something different. And we'll get into the games here shortly, but it was evident in game one in this series. It was evident in game two. They haven't lost since, you know, my kids were born, it seems. So, I mean, this is ridiculous. It's, you know, what did I tweet tonight? It's not fair. You know, the other teams just say, it's not fair. This is not fair. And it's not that they have that much more talent than the other teams in terms of, oh, this guy's obviously much better. He's obviously this or that and the other. It's just what they do with their talent. And I mm-hmm. think it starts with that mindset that Matt's talking about in directing their players to win, directed their coaches to coach a winning attitude and winning baseball. And it all fits in when you get to the postseason and you have to, you know, you have to perform when you're, as one of my favorite coaches says, be able to be at your best when your best is required. Well, they're at their best, and their best is much better than the other team's best when it's required. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, I guess if there was anything I would add to that is that it's easier to be the Hawks. Well, first of all, there is an organizational issue. I know I've mentioned it before, and when the Hawks were building their minor league and rehab facility at Chicago, which is a Tama Home Stadium, where their Western League farm team plays. They were building it, and they went around to the team, and they asked all the different departments, what do we need? And one of their rehab coaches, who's a friend of mine, has been on a guest on the show, Mr. Torita, told me, look, one thing that all major league teams have in their rehab facilities is an exercise pool for doing lower body work and soft tissue stuff. And he said, you'll want it, but if you put it in after you've built the facility, it's going to cost you three times as much. And you'll probably want it down the road and wish you had it. And he said, I was expecting, because it's so expensive, I was expecting a huge explanation for why it couldn't be in the budget. Instead, he got, okay, it's on the list.
Yeah, and I remember you told that story before.
Sure,
and...
okay, I apologize for doubling up.
Oh, no.
But that is the attitude. What do we need to do better? Let's do it. Period. There's really no question. There's not a lot of hemming and hawing about, oh, is this the right way to do thing? Is this the Japanese way? There's never any hemming and hawing about, can we get away with doing this? Can we get away with cutting this corner? I think that's probably the best thing that describes the Hawks. The Giants want to be that team, and the Giants try to be that team. But the Giants have a handicap, and the Giants' handicap is that they play in the Central League, because it's hard to be better when the competition isn't as good. And I think the competition in the Pacific League, even in the worst teams in the Pacific League, from the bottom up, the competition is better in the Pacific League. I think that helps. I think there are some great talents on the Hawks, and there have been great talents, but the level, I think the players rise a little, they learn a little bit more playing in the Pacific League.
Yeah, I guess I can buy that. The point is, though, for me, is that certainly if you're the Giants, you're playing, your direct opponent is this other Central League.
Sure. The group, and that's the problem.
Central League teams. But your ultimate competitor is the team you're going
to
meet.
Yeah, but they don't get to, the problem is they don't get to play against them that much. I think I don't think
you have to play against them to better yourself to be good when you get a chance to play against
them. I think it helps to play more, to play better competition more often. I think that if they put all 12 teams in the same league, the Central League teams would start out bad, but they'd get better more quickly.
I was going to bring this up because it's getting to the point where it's ridiculous that the Pacific League is winning all these Japan series, and I was wondering if they would just consider taking the top four teams and maybe reseeding and then playing a Japan series. Because if this turns out to not be a competitive Japan series, if it is the blowout that you and Alex Ramirez projected or predicted, this makes it really silly, because now the Hawks will have won, I don't know, 13 consecutive Japan series games, potentially 17 consecutive postseason games. It's getting really ridiculous. So, reseeding, just saying, let's take the top four teams.
Yeah. And again, it shouldn't really be a surprise. This is sort of the way things have been going for a long time. And it'll change. I mean, of course, nothing ever stays the same. And eventually the Central League will realize that they can't essentially make room for the Giants in their organizational planning and still compete, and still be as good as they can be. They have to stop saying, okay, we can't choose this guy in the draft because the Giants want him. Michael Westbay, the great, I'm going to say the great Michael Westbay.
That's fine.
And I were talking tonight, and his take was, he said, the Central League teams basically spend much of their budget, much of their energy around not crossing the Giants. Because to stay in their good graces, that's essentially how they keep their businesses afloat. And as long as that's the model. their league is really in bad shape.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about this at another mm-hmm. point, maybe okay. probably sometime in the off season, which is going to be next week. Because, no, I mean, it definitely will be next week because yep. this Japan series will be over. Well, thanks a lot to Matt, and mm-hmm. and we appreciate it. And I know he's expecting his child is due before the year is out. So
wow, good luck with that.
Good luck. Yeah, and let's get to the Japan series. Make a two-seam transition and talk about Game One. So the first thing I want to say, anyway, before we get into the Japan series itself, is I guess I'm about one inning away in Game Three from saying this is stupid and what's the point. But we've gotten to the point now with the victory tonight. The Hawks have won 10 consecutive Japan series games, 14 consecutive postseason games they have won. And I was thinking tonight that they were playing at Kyocera Dome against the Giants, but they probably felt like they were playing against the Oryx Buffaloes because they certainly treated the Giants pitching that way.
Well, I think the Giants have serious issues with their pitching. If their second best starter this year was Shohei Togo and they're using him in long relief, there's something we don't know about the Giants pitching.
Yeah, I wanted to get into that. Okay. And I suppose we'll do it right now. Now is as good a time as ever. And I was unhappy or unsatisfied with the way Tadahito Iguchi used his pitching in the climax series. And I'm even more disturbed by
We knew that.
By this move.
Buy something. Okay, you're not just disturbed. But
well, I didn't tweet about it that much because I was busy, but
okay.
Just the shock and disgust, I thought of why are you taking one of your best pitchers off the starter's hill and putting him in the bullpen when you don't know when you're going to use him? And if you were going to use him as a weapon out of the bullpen, what kind of weapon? What was the plan? Did you not have faith in some of the other pitchers to get you to a point where you wouldn't have to use Togo or something? Or did you want him to be a bullpen piece in the series? And of course, I watched Proyaku News, and Dave Okubo had talked about the fact that he was shocked to see Togo come in relief. And you know, I mapped out my plan last week on last week's show for how if the Giants were able to pull off some kind of upset in this series, how they would do it. And Togo I had as a starter, and little that I know, because I did, as soon as I saw him on the mound, I started searching the internet. I said, well, this had to be out there somewhere. And in fact, a couple of days before we did our taping last week, a story was out there about how Togo was supposed to come in as a reliever. He was going to be a middle reliever. And so that was out there, but I don't know. Why is one of your best pitchers taken out of the rotation and stuck into limbo, not really knowing when and what situation you're going to use him in? Was Hata afraid of not having a better pitcher to come in case they got into trouble? And basically he was expecting to get into trouble, or I didn't get it. What was your take on it?
What I can think of is there's some reason why rationale or logic tells me that there's some concern about throwing Togo.
They can't be concerned about throwing him. But
using him, stressing him or something, or, you know, they've said, okay, like, okay, we only want to use him. We want to limit his pitches per outing to, you know, like 20 or 30 pitches or something, or 40
I'm
pitches.
Not,
I don't
I'm
know.
Not
I mean, I, yeah. I'm curious to find out, but Hara being Hara, you know, it'll happen. He'll say, I can hear, you know, when reporters ask him this question, he'll say, well, I'm not going to tell you. Hara will say, I'll tell you after the series. And then he'll never, ever tell anybody later. You know, he'll never tell you until 5 years later, you're sitting on the bench and he says, hey, you know that how that happened? Because he likes his secrets. He likes that sort of to have that little air of mystery, like he knows something you don't. But I think there is a fitness issue. There are fitness issues we don't know about. My guess is the I think the game three starter is going to be Angel Sanchez, and all I can think of is Seishu Hatake.
Right. Well, they said he was supposed to be in the bullpen. The story I read said it was going to be Togo and Hatake coming out of the bullpen to.
Well, we haven't seen Hatake. But I guess they want to cover their, you know, cover a little bit. So if there's somebody who's not on the roster, that's a good chance, because one of the things about the Japan series is the activation and deactivation list is you can activate and deactivate anybody for any amount of time. So for example, if they deactivated Sugo, which they did, deactivated Sugano today, they can use him tomorrow. There's no problem. Okay. They can. Right. So and basically, if you're looking for a starting pitcher, the place to look is somebody who's not currently on the active list, because they'll want somebody they're not saving. And since Hatake was not on the list, I'm gathering that he and Sanchez will be the two starters in games three and four.
Well, it might be done by then. I don't know.
It looked like it was done pretty much in the first inning today.
Yeah. Well, let's start with game one. So the game ended 5-1 in favor of the Hawks, and this was on Saturday night. And it was pretty much a snoozer for me. Now, you and I talked before we started recording, and you said it was a little bit more exciting than last night. Yeah, because it was a little bit closer, and there was some thought that could go into what the Giants could do to come back. This game tonight was kind of a blowout, and it just stayed that way. But well, anyway,
I thought the interesting thing was I don't know if I tweeted about this or not, was Koji Uehara was watching the game, as many people are remotely. He was watching from the Nikon Sports offices. I saw somebody posted a picture of him watching the TV at the Nikon Sports. And he said, you know, at I think it was the second or third inning, and he said, you know, Sugano's pitching better. I think the quality of his pitches is better than Senga's. And I thought, you know, I don't disagree with that. But here's the thing. Sugano did pitch pretty well, and Senga got saved a couple of times from his mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, he threw two splitters that didn't tumble. They just hung up and they got smoked. And they were both caught at the wall, one of which saved him a run. So he had those things going, but Sugano, what struck me was that, and I'll go back to the one, I think the Pacific League hitters, I think the quality, the velocity in the Central League, I was surprised to find out the average velocity of Central League fastballs was slightly higher this year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, it's not, velocity is not everything. Spin is probably as important as, you know, how much backspin you can get on the fastball is about as important as velocity and location. And I think the Pacific League hitters are used to seeing better fastballs. And Sugano threw a couple that weren't. They were doing better staying on his fastball than the Giants hitters were better doing staying on Senga's. Of course, Senga's is one of the better fastballs in Japan, but still, I think the Pacific League hitters are used to seeing better quality pitches.
Okay, well, you're putting the cart before the horse. I was going to get into the game a little bit and talk about what happened before
Okay, go ahead.
That stuff, but
go ahead.
So Ryoya Kurihara, who basically had a breakout season and is one of the reasons, or the main reason, why Seiichi Uchikawa is now out of the organization, and we'll get to that later. But he hit the 2-run home run in the second inning off of Sugano, and really, the Hawks never really looked back after that. And then Kurihara, they just never really seemed to want to pitch him in after that. It was supposed to be a slider, I guess, from Sugano in the second inning, and it just turned out to be a float ball. The things I call the float ball, the home run pitches that are, "Blue, please hit me."
The location was bad. The pitch itself
it went right down the middle, and it was too high. Yeah. That was a floater. That's a floater.
Yeah, it did. I mean, it didn't hang in the sense that it didn't just sit there.
Yeah, it wasn't just sitting there. It just moved.
But he was all over it. I mean,
he moved into the wheelhouse.
Yeah.
So, and then Kunihara also had a 2-run double and then another double later on in the game. And it just seemed like they didn't want to pitch him inside, and they kept throwing everything on the outer half or on the outside of the plate. And he was just sitting on pitches after that, and he was whacking them. So he looked really good. And then Kodai Senga, the starter you talked about just moments ago, and I've loved him since the first time I saw him. He goes 7 innings, no runs allowed, 3 hits, 3 walks, probably on the high side. And like you said, he gave up some hard hit pitches or some hard hit balls. But we did have Zealous Wheeler throwing out Kurihara at the plate on a throw that I would say it was adequate. It was a 2-hopper. But from that spot on the field,
he's 30 feet behind the shortstop.
Yeah. And from that spot on the field, you'd
look at no business running. But this third base coach was so eager to send him. So he didn't.
Yeah, well, he should be.
Him.
I mean, with 2 outs, there were 2 outs, right? And
yeah, he had terrible. He had a bad jump, I think, too.
But you know what? The throw wasn't terrible. No. It was on time and it was accurate. And those are important too. And he got the out. So good for him. And then Yuito Mori, you know, much better in closer games than non-save situations. He kind of made things interesting in the ninth inning, loading the bases and allowing a run, but he closes it out. So 5-1.
But he does it. It's part of his charm.
It's charm. I thought he was just being Mitch Williams out there. Just, you know, I don't care if you swing it or not. I'm throwing it in my spot. Or I'm aiming for my spot. Now, he's throwing it. It's different places from that. But he's trying. He's working out there. Yeah, again, not an impressive showing by the Giants offensively, but just good, solid baseball from the Hawks. What was interesting, because I was literally falling asleep in the later innings in this game.
Yeah, it was. Well, once we got into – well, if Levon Moinello didn't wake you up, then you were more than asleep. You were in a coma.
Well, you know, I tweeted earlier this year, it just looks like no one's ever going to get a hit off of him. I don't see how they do it. When they try to sit on the off-speed on the curve, zip it by him.
I know. He's
and
got
then
that.
They can't hit the curve anyway. So
he's got, he just really he spins it so well. He's got so much backspin on the fastball. He's got so much top spin on the curveball. He just guys' eyes pop out of their sockets. So that was good. And I guess the last comment about the starting pitchers was Senga Sugano. It was Sugano. He was trying to work the corners a lot, and the difference between Senga and Sugano was Senga sort of like just stuck with the plan, which is these are the pitches I'm going to throw, and if I walk a guy, that's kind of too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Sugano wasn't going to. Oddly enough, Sugano walks a lot of people. He walks people because he gets cute a lot, but that's usually he walks people when he's got big leads. But he was not going to walk people, and so what happened, of course, is then he threw a bunch of pitches that he shouldn't have thrown in the middle of the zone because he was going to challenge people in the zone. And the pitches he was challenging people in the zone with really weren't that good. And so he needed to go into the zone earlier. That was just my thing. And Senga had his fastball was really good, but his split was really lousy. He missed a lot of them. He didn't locate them well. His slider was useless. He threw a couple of good curves, but generally, yeah, he did throw one really good split to Kazuma Okamoto. I remember that he missed by about a foot, but most of his splits were really lousy. His slider, he couldn't throw pretty much anything but the fastball where he wanted, but he just kept, you know, he just kept, you know, this is my game. I'm going to pitch it my way. And if you don't like it, tough it.
Yep. So we'll put that game to bed because that really wasn't much to talk about. And then tonight on Sunday, the Hawks win 13-2. And again, Nobutaka Imamura gets the start for the Giants. And blah, that's all I can say about that. He throws an inning and 2/3. And basically the game was over by the time he was done with it, doing his fine work out there.
Yeah, it was like today was like a bullpen day for the Giants.
I figured it was going to be, and that was part of it, but that's, you know, game two and you're going to bullpen day.
When I looked at the series, I was thinking the Hawks are the Giants are a starter short because they're both missing one guy. The Hawks are missing now Higashihama, and the Giants are missing Christopher Mercedes.
Yeah,
That leaves the Hawks with basically four reliable starters and the Giants with three, provided one of them is Jose Togo.
Yeah, not shifted or shuffled or reshuffled right. to the bullpen. But anyway, Imamura gave up four runs, and then they went to Togo, even gave up two runs in his two and a third innings, and it just really wasn't pretty most of the night for them.
And the infield defense just kind of, I don't know, so they didn't give up, but they were just not relaxed.
Yeah, well,
they made a bunch of plays. I mean, it wasn't going to make much difference in the long run, but yeah, it didn't help that they were. They looked tight,
right? And then Alfredo Despaña, he tied a Japan Series record with six RBIs in the game. He hit a grand slam late in the game. Yurisbel Gracial, he had two hits and a home run. And gosh, those were the highlight guys. Everybody seemed like had a hit almost. Four hits for Kurihara. He comes back with another good game, so they got him started. They're not going to be able to get him out for a couple more games. And he looked a little bit lost in the climax series against Lotte, but he, you know, from that first at bat when he got that little float ball from Sugano, since then they just, whatever they're working on to get him out, they're going to have.
That first game, I didn't really see, you know, I didn't see as much from him. I guess a couple of things, but I his first game was really impressive because it's like, you know, he smoked the slider, and then the next, I don't remember what the second pitch he hit, but maybe it was the second one. Next one, he comes up and he takes a fat slider that Sugano misses right in the heart of the zone for strike one. And then Sugano throws it. It was an okay fastball, but it was up a bit. It was up enough. It wasn't high like where you wanted. It was just up in the hitting zone. But it was away.
You're back in game one.
Yeah, and he just drilled it. So it's like you could see he had. He said after the game, his first at bat, his plan was, I'm just going to go after the first strike. I want to hit the first strike. I see, and so I guess the Bay Stars will take him. And then the second one, you could see he was looking for the first fastball in the zone. And then it was obvious what he was doing. You could see he had a plan, or at least I shouldn't say it was obvious he had a plan, but that's what it looked like, he had a plan. So I really like that, you know, going up and doing things and being proactive. That's sort of what the Hawks did to the Giants. They were proactive all over them.
Yeah. And Gracial, he just seems like he's a monster when it comes to when the lights are the brightest, you know, he's out there, he and Despaña. And his first hit on Sunday night gave him hits in nine consecutive Japan Series games. And I mean, give me a break with this. So they're coming alive. I think part of what you said is probably true, that the competition level is a little bit different when the Hawks get to the Japan Series. And I don't know if last night was just kind of at the beginning I thought, and I would love to hear from Giants fans out there. I thought the Giants just seemed off because they hadn't really been playing competitive games in a long time. And I thought they'd come back and play a little bit differently in game two and play better, but it was the opposite. They just got drubbed. So I would like to hear from the Giants fans as to how you feel about your number two winning pitcher coming out of the bullpen all of a sudden in the Japan series, and just how you feel about how the team looks against the Hawks.
Yeah, well, the Giants did schedule. I mean, they did schedule a game for last Saturday, so the Hawks were playing on Sunday, and the Giants weren't. But that was about it.
Yeah, but that's not a competitive game.
No, they did their best. They did their best. I mean,
I know.
You know, it is ironic. You know, in the 3 years before the Central League remade the Pacific League playoffs and called them a climax series.
Mm-hmm.
The Central League lost all three Japan series. Oh, well, one of them was close. The 2004 was close. It was a 7-game series, but they weren't, that's when things stopped kind of being competitive. I think it was a factor that the Central League teams were twiddling their thumbs, talking about playing intra-squad games, and the Pacific League teams were playing meaningful games.
Yes. Yeah. Like I said, and I had been worried about that for the past 6 weeks, I think, of the season. And I mentioned it on the show, saying, you know, they're not playing games that really matter. So,
and here's the thing, the team that doesn't want the climax series is the Giants. And so let's get rid of we have an excuse to get rid of the climax series. Let's do it, because the Giants don't want it. It's not really in anybody's best interest, except in the interest of the Giants, who don't want to have to lose in the climax series.
Right. All right. Well, like I said, the series, you know, maybe it'll go more than 4 games, maybe not, but it will definitely be over by the next time we talk to you. But let's move along. Let's make a 4-seam transition and talk about free agency and the free agents we know about. So I guess we'll just highlight some of the guys, because we can't get, obviously, to all of them.
No.
But my favorite move so far of the free agency period is the move of Seiichi Ichikawa escaping. I guess, you know, I don't know if he fell out of favor with somebody at SoftBank, if he, you know, did some off the field things with some people who are high up in this organization. But look, he's coming back to the Central League. He's going to join the Yakult Swallows. He has won batting titles in both leagues, right?
Yep. Second player in history after Shinichi Eto.
Okay, and he won an MVP in the Pacific League. And look, defensively, I guess you could put him at first or try to hide him out there in left field. But he's a Batman, and he'll be coming over to find Robin in the Central League.
And playing in that hitter's park. Oh, he'll love it. I just hope he's fit is the whole thing. I know he wasn't fit this year. I don't think he annoyed people as much as I think they said, look, we don't see where you're going to play. And they said, okay, well, you know, best wishes, you know, good luck.
Good. Well, I'm glad he's free. You know,
I do too. Cause he's a gamer, and having him at Jingu to answer questions all the time and to give his interesting takes on everything is going to be great.
Yeah, if we get out to the...
Yeah, if we're allowed back in the park after the Nazis take over from after the coronavirus, yeah.
Right, well, yeah, the coronavirus is doing its own Nazi work. But another move, Tetsuto Yamada also staying with the Yakult Swallows. And so
yeah, 7 years. That was a
big seven-year deal.
He said that was an incredibly hard decision, and I'll bet it was, because he could have gotten more money from the Tigers or the Giants or the Hawks.
I wanted to mention, by the way, that Ichikawa is 38. So yeah, that's another reason why he might not be a great defensive player. But Tetsuto Yamada staying, it's a big move. And then Yudai Ono of the Dragons announced right away that he was going to stay with the Dragons in his comfort zone in Nagoya. So that's good.
Not a surprise.
Yeah, not too much of a surprise. I know we got the question
also
about where he might go.
Agreed to a contract with.
I'm sorry, who?
The Swallows also agreed with their closer Taichi Ishiyama.
Mm-hmm.
I guess who's left is kind of interesting. There's a few. Tatsushi Masuda.
That's correct. Yeah, the Sabre Lions closer.
Yasuhiro Ogawa, the Swallows.
Mm-hmm. Their best pitcher.
Shoichi Ino of the Bay Stars.
The Carp, I think we're interested in getting him, but somewhere he's staying
quality,
in the Central
quality
League.
Quality pitcher, Kosuke Tanaka of the Carp. I don't
their shortstop.
Think he's going to go anywhere, but he's looking for new work. I would think someplace, somebody. He had a really good play, good year. He's coming off a couple of years where he was injured, and he was kind of back to almost normal. Although he's pushing 30 now.
Right. I think he is 30, actually.
Okay. Takahiro Shiomi is a free agent this year.
He's the pitcher with the Rakuten Eagles, right?
That's correct.
The lefty. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And
Yuito Mori is a free agent, although I'm not certain about his contract status. It's very rare for a Hawks player to get to their free agent year without a contract extension.
Very rare, but not...
Well, not impossible, but it's unusual if it's a player who's a key player. Typically, these guys get 3 to 5 year contracts.
Okay. Well, one of the guys I was surprised went into free agency was Takashi Ogino of the Lotte Marines, the oft-injured outfielder. Yeah, and I thought, and he's 35, and I thought, I was just wondering if he just kind of saw the future in Kyota Fujiwara and the way that kid hit in the postseason, and just thought, you know what, I might as well test the market and at the same time clear the path.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, there's always, I don't want to, you know, just like when people talk, players talk about going to the States and some, and even if it seems like they're not really viable major league candidates and people say, oh, he's doing it, you know, to try to, you know, get a better pay offer, but you know, that's his right. And maybe, but I don't want to attribute any sort of negative, you know, he's doing it for this reason or he's, you know, any negative reasons. If somebody says they want to test the market, you know, and see what people are interested in them and see what people say. Yeah, go for it. You earned it.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Kosuke Tanaka is 31 actually.
Okay.
So, yeah. So yeah, those are some of the highlights, and we'll see how those, negotiations work here in the off season. Should be fun to watch some of them, and really interesting and entertaining to watch others. Making a two-seam transition, Daisuke Miura of the Yokohama Bay Stars was introduced this past week as that team's new manager, and he officially takes over on the bench for Alex Ramirez. And you know, I was thinking, the pictures came over. I was at the office that day, and the pictures came over on the wire, and I'm thinking, you know, his hair needs to get its own salary. And
yeah,
with performance bonuses.
Yeah, I always had to do a double take whenever I was in, you know, in the off season in Yoyogi Park. If the
dancing Elvis
guys, yeah, the rockabilly guys in the blue jeans and leather jackets and t-shirts with the pompadours, I always had to check and see if Daisuke Miura wasn't kicking his heels up or something.
Yeah, so I only saw snippets of his presser, and it sounded like, you know, he's gung-ho, and good luck to him. But honestly, I'm struggling to push back the feelings of resentment toward the team for dumping Alex Ramirez and, you know, Rami Khan. But, you know, I thought about that too, and I said, you know, it's time to move forward as I thought about it during the week. And, you know, he had 5 years, Alex did.
Yeah.
And that's actually a real strong sample size, quote unquote. You know, if to decide if you as an organization like the direction you're going in, or if you don't like the direction that you're going in. So regardless of the results, do you like how you got where you got? And so I thought organizationally, I should respect the fact that the Bay Stars, you know, deserve the chance to take their organization in a different direction.
I think in retrospect, and I tend to overthink this quite a lot, like I do most things. I mean, anything that is trivial, I tend to overthink. No, I agree with you. We learned a lot about what he brings as a manager, about what Alex Ramirez brought as a manager. And I would say, you know, he was an extremely good manager in the historical context of that franchise, because that is the worst franchise in the history of Japanese pro baseball.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Based on results
on their win loss records since they came into being. Yes, they're the worst in history.
Yes.
So the fact that he is one of their better managers, while it's good, he's also not, I don't think, a historically great manager, because there have been a number of guys who've done more with less. That still being the case, he does have a lot of things going for him that I think would be very beneficial to other teams. Now, DeNA mm-hmm. would decide, okay, as you said, time to go in a different direction, trying to Alex Ramirez. I mean, the obvious thing he brought was talent development. I thought he was very good at highlighting about getting guys who the team was, you know, maybe the team was not big on or spotting talent and getting those guys to play and committing. He was very good at committing to guys. And that's a very hard thing for a lot of Japanese managers to do. So built up the talent of that team. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I think the team recognizes that. So
yeah, and I think one of the legacies that he will leave is that some of the players he just spent a short time with, mm-hmm. if we watch them develop over the next 2-3 seasons, I think we can attribute some of their development. And I'm talking about the hitters, not the pitchers. Might be able to attribute some of that to Alex Ramirez and maybe some little nugget of knowledge that he passed along to them. But I mean, obviously we can't prove it, but I would certainly like to think he had something to do with it. And one of those guys is Keita Sano, who obviously came out as a first-time starter this year and won a batting title. And that's the next thing we want to get into. Just very quickly, if we make a little seamless transition here and sneak in some talk about the leaders. And we usually don't talk about leaders because all that information, the stats are on the internet. Everybody sees it daily or however often you look, and it's all available. So I don't talk about home run leaders so much and batting leaders and all those things. But I did want to mention a couple of guys and just acknowledge them and recognize their contributions. And one of them was Sano because of his winning a batting title with really his first year as a starter. And I think there were so many questions. Why is he batting fourth? Why is he starting? He's taking over as captain when Yoshitomo Tsugo left for the United States to play in the majors, and all these questions and all this doubt. And, you know, Alex Ramirez and his faith and his belief in Sano never wavered, and he kept him in the cleanup spot. And the kid hit enough home runs, I believe, to satisfy the media / fan base.
Right.
I was happy. I said, a guy hitting almost 400 in your cleanup hole, leave him there and don't complain. But still, you want people who think traditionally about that cleanup spot, want somebody who specifically hits home runs. And I'm like, you know, the guy, if you're on base, he's going to knock you in. Just shut up.
he was ripping the ball, and it was ironic that the day the first story came out about Alex Ramirez should be fired, it was on a Monday after he said something on a Saturday about, you know, his pitchers. And then it was, you know, the laundry list. Alex Ramirez doesn't know how to put his socks on. Alex Ramirez doesn't know how to do this. Alex Ramirez doesn't do that. His mustache is the wrong color. And Keita Sano is a cleanup hitter who has no home runs. Of course, what happened is in the next 5 games is Keita Sano hit 3 home runs in 5 games. And I think he hit about 10 in the next 3 weeks. So it's like...
Yeah, finished with 20. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just people... My point is, people were just they
being people,
exactly. And of course, the new manager. The only thing I can say about Daisuke Miura is that the story on the Monday, the first day of the Alex Ramirez must go story, and the Bay Stars have already decided to get rid of Alex Ramirez stories, and this was in July. The next day was on the Monday. So the Monday, the stories came out. And that day, the Eastern League played, and the DeNA Bay Stars minor league team beat the Yomiuri Giants and successfully sacrificed 3 times.
Yay!
And that was evidence that Daisuke Miura was qualified to manage the Bay Stars.
Ding, 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 ding. All righty then.
Right.
You got what you wanted.
3 sacrifice bunts, indeed. And all I can tell, well, I'll tell you this, they did finish they finished a very close runner-up to the Giants, which is an accomplishment because the Giants are a well-funded, you know, a deep minor league operation. So they finished a very close second to the Giants, and they did lead the Eastern League in bunts. So there,
take that. He's ready. All right. So, Proof. Getting back to the leader talk. Okay. my other category that I wanted to touch. Well, I do want to recognize Masataka Yoshida winning the PL batting title and doing it with a 350 batting average. And we've had a lot of questions about him since he overcame injuries that rookie season and mm-hmm. was able to put some strong
questions
seasons together. Yeah.
Who was asking the questions?
Listener.
Oh, okay.
Listeners in the past, they were asking.
I was asked one the other day. I was asked about him.
Yeah. The other category I wanted to touch on very quickly before we move on is stolen bases, and Ukyo Shuto of the Hawks winning the stolen base title with 50 stolen bases. He was only caught 6 times.
Mm.
They're calling it a world record every time they refer to it on the news. The fact that he stole bases in 13 consecutive games, or he stole at least one base in 13 consecutive mm-hmm. games, and just an amazing runner with speed. And we're talking about the Hawks about to crush the Giants in the Japan series with no mention of Kenta Imamiya, their all-star level shortstop.
He's a free agent too, which is kind of interesting.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah, that is kind of interesting. If he's not injured, yeah, he'd be very useful for some. Yeah, we really haven't mentioned Kenta Imamiya most of the season. I know that we mentioned him a couple times, but mm-hmm. here we are with the Giants about to crush the Giants about to be crushed here in the Japan series, and not really mentioning the fact that Imamiya is not around. And Shuto is not a great defensive player yet, and Imamiya definitely was.
Yeah, well, he's been, he's had calf and leg muscle injuries this year, but they've got this like 4-man middle infield, I guess 5 with the Hikaru Kawase and Ukyo Shuto and Taisei Makihara and Keizo Kawashima, Makihara, Shuto. That's 4. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. 4-man. They've got this 4-man core. Okay.
Yeah, so obviously Imamiya not there, and they haven't lost a beat. They haven't skipped a beat. So anyway, I wanted to acknowledge him. I thought that was incredible. I think he only actually played in 103 games, but it was a 120-game schedule, mm-hmm. and he stole 50 bases. So just incredible. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, so Eric, thank you for waiting. Eric sent us a question in via email a while back, and we've had this one on the shelf, but we haven't had time to get to it, so let's get to it tonight. Let's see. Eric's in Beijing, and he sent us a question by email, and he says, in Keith Law's new book, The Inside Game, he explains why it's a bad idea to draft high school pitchers in the first round. He compares career total war between high school pitchers / high school hitters / college pitchers / college hitters drafted in the first round and top 10 picks. The results show that high school pitchers have the lowest success rate among these 4 groups. However, MLB executives still have the bias in favor of high school pitchers. Since Japan loves high school baseball and it loves this, or it has this sort of Koshien mania, I guess MPB teams also liked to draft high school pitchers in the first round. Does war show that it's also a bad idea to draft high school pitchers in the first round in MPB? So what a great question. As soon as we got this, I was really excited, and I sent it off to Jim very quickly. And I said, Jim, we got a great question. So before you get started and probably not stop for a couple of days, and obviously I'm sure you have some data to go with it.
Yep.
This question has, I guess, unbeknownst to you, you were preparing for this question. I don't know when you might have started to do it. But anyway, I don't think it's necessarily, Eric, a love affair with high school pitchers. I think there's a heavy importance that's weighted on this summer high school tournament. And there's also a spring tournament. And what happens is you get these high profile kids who really do well in the tournament. And sometimes it's because they're really good, and sometimes it's because their teams are really good and their coaching is really good. And what happens is you get guys who maybe shouldn't be drafted where they're drafted, but they get drafted because they have such a high profile that teams don't want to pass up on them. And so that's why I pointed out, and I often point this out, that it doesn't really matter where you get drafted. What matters is whether you can play or not. And I don't know, I just remember the two biggest, I guess the most recent examples we have of this is Masahiro Tanaka coming out of high school the same year that the handkerchief prince Yuki Saito up in Hokkaido with the Fighters came out. And one of them went to college, that was Yuki Saito, and did okay in college at Waseda, but really wasn't a great pitcher and really just hasn't been. And he's still, actually, I heard he's not retiring. He's going to torment us a little bit more. And then you had Masahiro Tanaka, who was obviously the better of the two even in high school, but it's just the profile. And I think the profiles would help Yuki Saito get have such a career that he's had. Even now, if you look at the numbers, there's really no reason he should be pitching on the first team at any time, but he is able to get up there and get his shots in and then go back down to the farm. But anyway, Jim has some actual data. What do you got for us, Jim?
Well, first I want to say that it does matter where you're drafted, not in a grand scheme of things, but if all things being equal, the sum of first round draft choices are better than the sum of set because they're drafted before. I mean, not sure. There are fourth round picks. As everybody knows, my favorite draft is the 2001 fourth round when Ichiro Suzuki and Tomoaki Kanemoto and Shinjiro Hiyama and a couple other guys were drafted. Oh, and Norihiro Nakamura were all drafted. So that was the fourth round, guys. And Ichiro was one of those pitchers you shouldn't draft. So, okay. Yeah. Now, okay, let's see. First of all, let's go with this. Are high school pitchers most popular in the first round? The answer is no. 41%, and I'm only going to do the draft choices through 1999 because those players are basically, their careers are done. So we can see how they've done over their careers. Okay. And I will also use a condition that I don't use war because I don't have access to war, and career war in Japan is very difficult to get. So I use win shares, and so I used three win shares as a win. So a win above replacements, it's essentially the same thing, although calculated differently. So we'll just go with that. So 41% of all the first round picks between the time the draft started in 1965 and 1999 were corporate or college pitchers.
Okay,
41. The second group was high school pitchers, 30%. The third was a college and corporate position players, about 17%, and then 12% for the high school position players. Now, who had the most value? In terms of the safest drafts, now, you use the use the measure of I guess 10 war or more, the percentage of 10 war or more. So I'll go with the percentage of 30 win share players. The highest percentage is for the college and corporate league position players. They are they're the most reliable. Basically, position players are generally more reliable. Actually, high school players are less reliable than guys coming out of college and corporate leagues because you more or less know what you've got. But high school players, the most of the elite of the elite are coming out of high school for a couple of reasons. One is sometimes there are guys who are so good. They're just so good. They're can't miss. I mean, we want to say that, but there are teams that could miss with anybody. Sometimes teams don't, they have an obvious talent and they just, things don't click for one reason or another, or guys get hurt. So, but basically there's a lot more guys who are high school. There's a lot of high school kids who are so obviously talented, and fewer of those are position players. But the position players who go in the first round tend to be vastly more valuable than the pitchers. And I think it's because there's just so few of them and teams tend to go for, why it is, I don't know. But okay, so the high school pitchers, the high school players are less reliable, but they tend to have the best, the highest value among the elite players. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
Okay. So, yeah. So if you want, so if you're looking for superstars, your chances are better of, I don't know if they're better of plucking a guy out of high school, but high school players will have a higher tend to have a higher ceiling.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Hopefully we'll have another panel discussion and we'll maybe talk about this with maybe some of the coach, if we can get a coach on and a current player again, and even a retired player, and talk about some of these things and talk about how development plays a strong role in that. But thank you so much, Eric, for the question. Anyone else that has a question, hit us up at JBW Podcast on Twitter with the hashtag High Heats, and by email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com, or hit us up on the Facebook page. Leave us a comment or a question there. Now, like I said, next week, the season will be over by the time we talk to you again. So we will talk about our off-season workout program at that time. Until then, we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballparks.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. Be sure to send in your questions with hashtag High Heat, and you'll hear from us again next week.